My parents scared me. You don't go near that gun. It's going to shoot. I know they loved me. They don't want me to be shot. But I'm still scared to shoot. I'll stay in the house if the bear comes. I don't know how to hunt. I can fish through ice. That's all I could get. I don't even know how to rod and reel. I'm laughed at lots of times. I'll have to tell that I did not even put one net out, but I've been cutting a lot of fish this summer for myself. I'm real thankful for willing people that are listening. What I need, they go out catching. I have to be real willing to try and dry them up myself, take care of them myself. I'm thankful for my family and my neighbors and village people here in Unalakleet. I'm thankful for the city council too. Lots of times I'm real thankful for them because they make my road clear at winter time. Of course they do on taxes, but that tax is not very much to have them going. Thank you very much.
Judge, people, I just want to say a few things here. When NESCA was organized back in 71, a lot of people didn't know anything about the Native Land Claim Settlement. And when they organized and divided into regions, I didn't know nothing about regions, you know. And when they made rules about how they should spend the money and giving it to the corporations, I think, to my way of thinking, I think they should have allowed a certain amount, half of that settlement in each village, to go to individuals and let the corporation take care of the half. Because I know the way they spend some of that money, you know, in our region here, we lost a lot of money in bad investments. And I really feel bad about that. It could have helped a lot of people. This other way, it was just thrown away. $5 million at a time, you know, something like that in 1 year. Where did that money go? In the beginning, they told us we'd be protected from that kind of a thing that would, you know, take that money without us knowing about it. But I don't see any protection there. How was forming the corporations protecting us people? It didn't. We don't know where that money go. And that's one of my big questions. And then I know the people here have benefited in some ways through the corporation. There's been a store that was organized under the Native funds, and there's been jobs given to a lot of people here, and they benefit in that way. But our corporation is, we're spending money, more money than we earn, and it's going to disappear. And we're supposed to try and save some of that money so that we could pay some of that tax on the native land that we acquired, that was supposed to be taxed after 1991. Well, I think when we first heard about that native land, we thought, boy, we're going to get all this land. And we didn't know that. We was just going to get just small portions along the river compared to the vastness of where we used to hunt years ago, back toward the Yukon, Anvik, up up toward Katil, Mulato, headwaters of North River, where our people used to hunt. Now it's not in that, in our lot, I mean the native lands that were allotted to each corporation, compared to what we got now. It's nothing if we lose that land, you know, if we can't keep that land for ourselves, our people that really needed it. We use a lot of that land for subsistence. We fish from on the river that is beyond our native land claim. There's allotments there, but if we're not allowed to go to that place anymore, if they make rules that we can't go there anymore, then it's going to make our people suffer for want of food. And our whale huntings in the Norton Sound and our herring fishing, if we lose all of that, and our berries, you know, where we pick berries, if that land is given away, or the state takes it over and develops into something else, then our people will have nothing. And so native land claim settlement, in a lot of ways, I think, help out our people culturally, I think, to some extent, we're recognized, you know, that we're people that can learn as we go. Those that are willing and not lazy and willing to put in a hard day's work. That's what it's all about, I think. If you want to work, if you want to live right, if you want to make earnings that are good, you have to work for it. And that's the way it's been for me too. I lost both my parents when I was 14, and I was on my own all that time since till now. But people, they in a lot of ways helped me out, and I know they trust me, and I trust a lot of them. But but I'm afraid, like if we don't have an alternative, like the IRA Council to help us out, I think we cannot compete with the white culture at this time. I think to some extent we could, but I think we'd be no match. Like at the beginning of the land claim settlement, on the TV, there's this white, the commentator, he said that the natives of Alaska were going to take over the land, and they don't want no whites there. Some of them mentioned that, you know, and they said, this commentator said, well, I'll fight you for that land. And and I never forgot that comment. But we need help, I think, to amend some of the laws that were placed when they first make the native land claim settlement, you know. I'm sorry, my throat always go a little cockeyed when I talk sometimes, and I thank you for hearing me out. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Judge Berger, my name is Chuck Soxey. I've got a short, unprepared statement to make. I'm going to talk for myself as an individual, and also briefly as chairman of the Northern Sound Health Corporation, one of the nonprofit health entities that were organized under the ANSCA Act. First, I'd like to speak as an individual. I grew up, my father, on Unicleat. My father is Franklin Soxey, and my grandfather was Harry Soxey. Both of them are buried over there at the Unicleat Cemetery, and both of them were people that gleaned a living off our land here in our Northwest Alaska. I grew up at my father's knee, him telling me stories about hunting and fishing throughout Norton Sound and points north, east, and west of here, and also from Harry Soxey. I remember Dad telling me one time when the issue of land claims came up when I was just a kid, and I still can remember it to this day. He was talking about his father, Harry Soxey, when they were talking way before the IRA Act and before we got formally organized. And those of you that are elder here remember Harry. He was one of the more educated natives. He was a pastor, and he'd been around. He got educated by the Evangelical Covenant Church at wherever they send people out to get their pastoralship. And he went outside a long time ago. I think he went out on a ship to Seattle and went by land over to, I think it's Chicago or someplace like that. But then he came back, and they were the local council, and I can't think of the names, that were talking about organizing our land. And this is just my brief part of my history. I know everybody has their own part of history of where we come from, and we all come from the same area. But the leaders at that time were talking about our boundaries, and we have our traditional boundaries. You know, we extend as far as 90 miles to the east, where we meet our neighbors to the Yukon, the interior. And that's where our boundaries ended. But needless to say, my grandfather was one of the minorities when the votes came down. They asked his opinion on how we should break up or how we should claim our boundaries. And according to my father and what his father told him, he said, our land extends, if you want to put miles on it, it extends 100 miles to the east, 100 miles to the south, 100 miles to the north. And he pointed to the water out we have out here. It's 100 miles that way too. The sea is an integral part, was and still is, as far as I'm concerned, an important part of our land base. So that all of us grew up under those people that lived and fished and hunted all points of the compass out of here, along with other villages and tribes that extended out. But they always respected their traditional boundaries, like a lot of other people have testified about. So that is our base. I mean, for any group of people, you know, that have to survive, we need the land and the sea. And if we lose that, then I think we will cease to exist as a people. I'm in full favor of some of the amendments that will be coming up at the AFN convention in a couple of weeks into transferring the land to the IRA councils. Those of you that are well read with the Act and a lot of legal opinions that have come forth from learned minds that deal in land law and everything else, the land claims did not absolve the traditional IRA councils. They never did. So that is our, I think that is our main and our last hope that we have as the indigenous people. And the IRA councils are, you know, nationwide, they're in the state of Alaska, and that is our last bastion of hope to survive as individual people. Another thing that bothers me is the and it sounds like a bad word to me, use afterborns. To me, they're not afterborns, they're the perpetuation of our race, our children. In May of 1971, I had two twins born to me, full-blooded Eskimos, and according to the Act, they're not part of the Inuit Native Corporation and the Alaska Federation Natives. To me, that's a big shame, and it just bothers the heck out of me. And I think the amendments that the AFN and the Congress will have to deal with that, just for the perpetuation of the Eskimo people, the Indian people, and the Aleut people. If we don't let our young people continue on or let them be a part of the Act, then along with amending the land to where it will revert back to the IRA councils, then I'm afraid, Mr. Berger, that 1991, you will see a classic case of extermination of the Alaska Natives as you know them, as they have been known, and that they will be known in the future. And that ends my individual remark. I just want to make a brief statement of the legality of the IRA councils. And I don't have the backing of the Northern Sound Health Corporation. I just want to state a factual statement. I'm chairman of the board of Northern Sound Health Corporation Board of Directors. It's incorporated in the state of Alaska. It's recognized by the Kuwerik Incorporated and the Bering Straits Native Corporation and the Alaska Federation Natives as a worthy health arm of Kuwerik and the health arm of Bering Straits Native Corporation. We're illegal and tidy. We're incorporated. We're in charge of the regional health issues that come to our region here. But it's a multi-million dollar operation. Our basic funding comes from the federal government to take care of the beneficiaries of the Indian Health Service. And we also have funding that we receive from the state of Alaska and different grants and from different foundations. So on the basis of that, for anybody to tell you that the IRA councils, you know, are not legal, you know, they're not talking right, because the Northern Sound Health Corporation is based, is incorporated by every resolution of all the 15 villages in the Northern Sound, in the Northern Sound region. So on the basis of that, I think the ANSCA Act can be amended, and I think at least that portion of the land can be resolved, and I think that's one of the biggest issues that we should go after, is the state and federal government finally recognizing the traditional IRA councils and their land and their waters. Thank you.
Thank you.
Justice Berger and our elders, friends, I'm Chuck Degnan. I was born and raised here in Unalakleet. I'm speaking as an individual. Although I am elected in various capacities for various organizations, I'm speaking as an individual. As a native, I have watched us change over the years. This has been a very fast change for our village since I was a little boy. Every right we have today, we have kept that right by exercising it, not because someone wanted us to exercise it. It's because we had no choice. We have to live. And that's the basis of our rights. Our biggest employer in this region are ourselves as natives. We use the land, the air, and the waters. There is no doubt in anybody's mind about that, whether they're federal officials, state officials, magistrates, any human being in this area knows that. There are many, many people who are jealous about natives exercising their rights because we have lived here. There are many federal and state regulations that are made so that we will not exercise our rights. They are trying to make our race illegal and sometimes call us immoral. I have watched the developments for a long time. Many things I see are good. Some disturb me, but I know we will survive as a people. I know that. We have the will and desire. The main thing we need to watch is to care about our people and fellow man and make sure that things are done fairly based on fact. The thing that causes confusion is rumor, unsubstantiated statements, and gossip. I have much faith in our people, and we will keep our land. It's ours. I have no doubt about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deggie.
Good evening, Justice Berger. I'm Alfred Nuckuck. I'm from the Tashekmute tribe of St. Michael, the people of the Big Bay. And before we get started going into whatever comments I may have which run the length and breadth of land claims, I would like to recognize for the public's gratification the delegation from St. Michael. And we have two groups, and both of which are total members of the Tashekmute tribe. And they are the corporation delegates, and they are Jerry Washington. Maybe if you could stand up, people will see you. Jerry Washington, he represents our youth, and Darlene Oten. They represent our youth at the St. Michael School. Edward Tom, Martha Abouchuk, Flora Mayumik, Zita Andrews, Bernadette Tom, and Clifford Tom. And just representing the tribe as members of the Tashekmute clans are Bertha Oten, Ambrose Oten, myself, Bibiana Washington, Andrew Oten, Esther Oten, Korok Nakak, and Louise Nixik. Uh, The individuals have, in different meetings, delegated a lot of the responsibility with reference to voicing our concerns to me. So if it seems like I presume to speak for the people, it's because they've told me to do so. And I appreciate your patience with reference to any of the remarks I make. And I base my experience and remarks on actual experience, not on theory. Justice Berger, I'd like to speak very simply with reference to the land claims issues and the histories of actions prior to then and following then. We have, ever since an act of Congress, which came into being in 1884, have officially, and even prior to that with the Treaty of Cession with the people of Russia, recognized that the rights of the indigenous aboriginals were to be respected and protected. Consequently, there have been several federal laws passed which have been, to some degree, most of it minor, effectuated, and very often, very slowly. If you take, for example, the Native Land Allotment Act of 1906, up to now here in 1984, we're finally starting to get some paper title. And this has taken some good 75 or 80 years. And these lands have traditionally remained in the ownership of the people who have claimed them. We also have the IRA Acts of 1934, amended in 1935 and 1936. And these deal with the tribal rights and responsibilities, inclusive of land rights, subsistence rights, and water rights for our members. And these have been stated with a historical perspective, not only to the people who preceded us as generations from before, but with concern expressed specifically for the generations which are to follow. Consequently, there's a terrific desire on the people, in retrospect of the Land Claims Act, to exercise the powers which they have under the IRA Act of 1934, 35, and 36. Consequently, to give this a little bit more perspective with reference to what the elders of the St. Michael area thought over 35 years ago, I'd take this opportunity to read a petition, and which will be submitted as part of our written testimony from the tribe of St. Michael. And if you'll pardon me, rather than explaining on a paragraph by paragraph basis, I will read the total petition and the signatures at the bottom of the petition. I'd be happy to give a paragraph by paragraph explanation of it, but it's very straight and simple, and it expresses the ultimate desires of our own people to protect themselves. United States of America, Department of the Interior, in the matter of the natives of St. Michael, Alaska, petition for possessory rights, hearing, and reservation to the Honorable, the Secretary of the Interior. Now come the natives of St. Michael and respectfully show the Secretary that from time immemorial up to the present and during the year 1884, they have used and occupied an area of land surrounding the village of St. Michael. Number two, that the land which they occupy is described as follows. To save our rights, a reservation for land and water rights, fishing and hunting. Water rights 25 miles out, from Gulsovia River to the heads of the Anvik River to the Yukon River, down the Yukon River to Pilot Station, from Pilot Station down the Koshunuk River to its mouth, from there back to Gulsovia. Outline on map attached. This reservation to be known as the Tashikmut Tribe Reservation. Number three, that on May 17, 1884, Congress passed a law stating that the lands which the natives of Alaska then used, occupied, or claimed should forever be reserved for their use, and promising that these lands would be surveyed and that at some future date, Congress would provide a way for the Eskimos to receive paper title to their lands. Number four, that they have never given up their rights in these lands, that they have never ceded, abandoned, or sold these lands. Number five, that no survey has been made of the lands, nor has any action been taken to protect the rights of the natives in their lands, except the Act of May 1, 1936, giving the Secretary of the Interior the power to create a reservation for us. Number six, that many people are coming to the territory of Alaska to make it their homes, that new industries are being encouraged to settle in the territory, and that because of these things, there is great danger that we will lose our lands and will be unable to support ourselves. Now, therefore, your petitioners pray that a hearing be held to determine the boundaries of the lands presently used and occupied and owned by the natives of St. Michael, and that those lands, plus any additional lands necessary to protect our way of life and assure us the chance to make a decent living, be reserved to our use in accordance with the Act of May 1, 1936. Natives of St. Michael, by Harry D. Johnson, Mayor and President, Members Councilman, Billy Mayumik, Vice President, Alexander Nixick, Secretary, Lawrence Lockwood, Treasurer, Steve Oten, Mike Lockwood, Gunnar Oyumik, Andrew Kobuk, Archie B. Etchick, and Peace Officer Alex Johnson, Delegate of the Village of St. Michael. Your Honor, I submit this as the first piece of written testimony from the IRA tribe of St. Michael.
All right. Thank you.
Following this petition, which has listed the historic names of our tribe, we received on June 11, 1948, the corporate charter from the United States government. It's a federal charter based upon the very words of that petition, which gives us the authority to protect ourselves. This, I'd hesitate to read in total. However, if forced to do so, I will. It's a basic charter based upon those very words which were signed by and voted on by 63 people as adult members of the Tsekhmet tribe in the 40s. And this this charter, based upon that petition, is certified by Mike Lockwood, Chairman of the Election Board, Ralph Ivanoff, who is the Secretary of the Election Board, with Paul Ivanoff as the government representative who advised us with reference to the drafting of the general powers in the original petition. That's item number two on the submission of our testimony.
Thanks.
Based upon the fact that we received this charter, go ahead, Ambrose. I couldn't hear you, Ambrose. You'll have to come down here. Following the acceptance of the charter, we set up our rules and regulations, and these are the Constitution of the Native Village of St. Michael, and these were also approved on June 11, 1948.
Could you post that in the post office of people here? We need people.
Yeah. I've brought copies. Yeah.
After they read, they turn it back home.
Yeah, sure thing.
Be all right.
Yeah. The request by Ambrose, one of our delegates, was that we make available for public viewing these original documents with the historic petition, and I've brought copies for review, and I'll provide copies to probably the IRA Council and other interested members, some members who were the original signatories to these documents also are from here. And for this particular reason, I feel it was particularly important for me to read this petition, because the ties between our communities and the blood ties are really and truly existent, and therefore the particular importance that I place in having this document brought to public view at this point in time. Consequently, to the charter being adopted, there was a constitution and bylaws, and we provide this as document number three.
Thank you.
As I was leaving St. Michael, a lady ran up to me and submitted this as her testimony. She asked if I would provide it to the review commission based upon the fact that she wasn't able to be here and that this is a forum for people to express their personal views with reference to the progress or dissent of the Land Claims Act. I will read this verbatim and submit it as item number 4 as free testimony of a private individual. The land is our inheritance.
Could we have her name? And
yes, I apologize for that. This statement is submitted by Esther Andrews. She's a member of the St. Michael Tribe, also enrolled to the St. Michael Native Corporation. The land is our inheritance. Where we eat from, where we live on, where we perform our everyday living. It provides us to keep us alive. To do away with it, we would have nothing for subsistence or our natural living on this special ground. To lose this land, we would probably lose our souls and our spirit. Land claims did not settle our inheritance, our culture, or it didn't take away our native language. Our lands are our heritage, and we especially need to know that. We should be the last people on earth to sell our heritage, because the land will always stand for our people. It is you, our native people, as leaders, teachers, and parents, who have the responsibility to protect these fragile and valuable resources. So if ANCSA was and is a land claim settlement, why was not the title to our land validated? The waves of the Norton Sound Bay pounding on our land banks and sea lines represent the future and continuing arrival of white people. Cultures and institutions impacting on our culture. Our task, or our main job towards our land, is to understand the waves of change and how they affect our native culture and languages. A stockholder or a native whose formal education background is limited, whose grocery store is the sea and open country, whose clothes are ordered from the wish book catalog and expensive stores, whose hunting and fishing gear are a mix of traditional and modern technology, and who is increasingly influenced by the newly installed village television, comes to realize that ANCSA is indeed complex and alien to his or her way of thinking. More than one Alaskan politician has stated that the ANCSA put an end to the special obligations owed Alaskan Indians and Eskimos as tribal members by the federal government. These politicians view that as a good thing, but it isn't a good thing for the state of Alaska we love. It is time for Alaskans to realize that whether or not they are pro-tribe or anti-tribe as a matter of principle or belief, that federal obligations and tribal power are ways to accomplish the impossible governance of the Alaskan landmass that state government cannot reach. Native control and native power is Alaskan control and Alaskan power. Control of Alaskan destiny by Alaskans will never occur without tribes and native corporations as partners and allies in that battle to free ourselves from the colonists and their allies among the local businesses and social elite. The Native and Alaskans fight for survival is our fight. Our fight for survival is theirs. And I submit this as document number 4 from St. Michael.
Thank you.
Just a few other remarks I'd like to place with reference to where we stand today in 1984 and in reflection on 1971, and the fact that the activities which went into the preparation of fighting for the Land Claims Act had gone for the previous 100 years or so, and that the convenience of having the Land Claims Act passed in 1971 was with reference to having the pipeline corridor created. Consequently, the reason that there was legislative support for getting the Land Claims Act passed was, as I stated in a previous statement at Nome before this honorable judge, that the Land Claims Act wasn't passed because we deserved a good deal. The Land Claims Act was passed because corporate entities such as those who are in the resource extraction industry, the Exxons and the Chevrons and the Sohios and the Arcos, had a good chance at getting access to $40 billion worth of subsurface estate and the profits that they could make from those resources. It just so happens that those resources happen to be in our doorstep and in our background and in our yard and in our bay. Consequently, the question that's asked is, what real benefit was there for the natives with reference to the passage of the Land Claims Act? Well, the benefits are really limited because it was convenient for the industry to have the passage to get at the resources, not have the Land Claims Act so that we could protect our own lands or resources. Because the biggest difficulty that we as a people faced was being forced in 1971 through probably 1976, 77, 78, being forced in a situation of learning a corporate structure and making multi-million dollar decisions while everybody else was waiting for us to fall down on our faces. So in essence, we were set up for a fall. We were set up for a fall because of the fact that, in simple terms, we weren't sophisticated businessmen. And I beg to state that we're probably very little more mature now as actual corporate multi-million dollar businessmen. Consequently, what we're going to need in order to deal with the actual impact of land claims is the time to review ourselves, review the mistakes we've made, go through a 15-year planning study to review what we need to do, take 5 years to implement a plan, and then, after those 20 years are over, perhaps then we can make some decisions based upon good corporate management. But until those particular simple criteria are followed, we have to fall back on the fact that there's an assault from day one on the lands which belong to our peoples. And one of the statements I reflect on is that while we talk about an act of Congress in 1884, which was passed as federal law to protect native lands, and then we look at the Native Allotment Act of 1906 and the IRA Act of 1934, amended in 1935 and 36, the Land Claims Act in 1971, and the Public Lands Act of Alaska, already before they've even dealt with surveying our tribal lands, under the previous acts, they're opening up Galsovia and Klickitarik and everything between here and there for public use and occupancy prior to recognizing the rights of our peoples which have existed from time immemorial. Well, all that means to me is it's really lip service with reference to protecting us. And it's the resources that the people are after. And it's a matter of dividing our communities up and conquering us if this action is to continue. We have perhaps a few years to deal with the 1991 issue, but I really would like to have at least another 15 or 20 years with reference to reviewing our situation. And if we're able to learn something from it, I think probably what we'll fall back on is exercising our rights as a tribal government under the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, 35, and 36. Because it's evident from the Charter, the Constitution, and the previous petition which had been adopted by the Tribe of St. Michael that is really our strongest protection. And the act of protection isn't done by sitting and waiting and watching for the people to come and use and occupy our lands and use airplanes to hunt the moose and to chase the reindeer and bring in professional hunters for $5,000 a day from Germany and decimate those resources. The act of power comes from our tribe saying, nuts to you, you have to hunt someplace else. And I apologize for my attitude with reference to everyone who's come into these lands, but I get down to the basic position that whenever, based upon state law, we have to be fair to the rest of the people, and I mean by that the people who come in who are not Aboriginal indigenous people, is every time we have to bend over to give the white man a right, we're taking a right away from a native. And I don't care whether they come up here as a missionary and want us to do a good job, or whether they come up as a Vista volunteer and fix themselves up a good high-paying job by staying in the village and becoming the only white man contact with any corporations or companies which have business dealings in our villages. The point is that as time goes by, all these people who are the missionaries and the Vista volunteers and the school teachers who are coming up to do us a good job, they stay and they keep the good job. And we're still sitting on the outside looking in, wondering when the economy of the Western world is going to arrive and whether we're going to be active financial participants in it. There are a great many philosophical differences I have with the actual fact that the Land Claims Act passed. I was a participant in trying to learn it, and I was not as wise as many of the other people who were involved with it, but there were a lot of other people who were involved. And based upon the fact that they were able to have the Land Claims Act passed, perhaps it was the best deal that they could come up with at that time. All I hope is that we don't give up hope and give up fight, that we don't have a chance to straighten it out now. The fact that the Honorable Judge here is here at least gives us a little hope. I'm not sure that any of his recommendations will have the force of law. However, at least if you take moral values into consideration, you might say that